You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, welcome into a Friday edition of Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, the only podcast that breaks down every Heat game, news item, rumor, and more. Thanks for listening on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or on the brand new podcast app Himalaya. My name is Wes Goldberg, and I'm here with David Ramil. We're opening up the mailbag today. We've got questions about Hassan Whiteside, as always, and who would make up our all-time Heat starting five. But let's start with this question from Billy, who writes in, why does the league overvalue Kyrie Irving? Pre-LeBron James, he won around 30 games. In Boston, they played higher quality basketball without him. I hope Brooklyn lands him so D'Lo can go somewhere where he's appreciated. I know Miami is a long shot, but still. David, what do you think?
I don't know that we do, to be honest with you. I think he's a sensational offensive player. I think there are holes in his game, and you know, specifically defensively overall, but I think he's also a number one pick. I think he is also a number one overall pick from Duke. I think he's won a champion, and he's hit a huge shot on the biggest stage of the game. And I think you combine all that with, to be honest, an interesting, eclectic personality. And he's the kind of player that kind of keeps himself in the news. He's not. Look, Karl-Anthony Towns is a number one pick, too. But, I mean, you hardly ever hear anything about him other than, you know, that he's soft or, you know, something to that effect. And he's a great, you know, number one type player. He's a great player in Minnesota, and you don't really hear much. And maybe that's due to Minnesota's lack of overall success. You kind of hear more about him not being good enough to handle Jimmy Butler than anything else. But, you know, I think there's a lot of different things there. As far as overvaluing him there, I think most of NBA Twitter and media and everything else kind of see him in the right light, that he's a great offensive player with holes in her game. Other than that, I'm not sure that the NBA in general kind of sees him any differently. Like, he's a cutthroat free agent because he's a great scorer. I don't know if there's any kind of overvaluing taking place. It's probably his quote-unquote leadership qualities. And I think that's mostly based on the fact that we kind of assume that having learned from LeBron and you know, during the four-year run or three-and-a-half-year run that they went to the finals, you know, that maybe that things would have been a little bit different there, but, you know, that maybe he might have been able to kind of have more of a personality to lead their team and things of that sort. But we saw that kind of fall apart last year for a number of different factors in Boston. So I don't know if you've got a different take on it, but that's pretty
much right. I think you're right. I think the leadership thing is the big question there. And I don't think the league is very aware of that. The league is very aware of that. And, you know, Zach Lowe did some reporting recently asking, like, is it even worth paying a little bit more for Kyrie Irving over just keeping D'Angelo Russell
if you're
Brooklyn, right? And that is a legitimate question, and I don't know what the answer is. And Lowe's reporting reflected that league executives were split on that a lot. I mean, I think a majority of them ultimately said, okay, but you signed Kyrie Irving. And Kyrie Irving is a sensational talent. I don't know if I've ever seen somebody finish around the basket
Nobody.
As well as him, and certainly not quite like him. He is incredible, and he's a great three-point shooter. He is so good on the floor. It's just the off-the-floor stuff. And again, and I don't know that it's toxic. I just think it's weird, and that's okay. And it doesn't necessarily work for a lot of locker rooms. And you know what? It's not all that surprising that it didn't work in Boston, okay? And so...
Can I be honest with you? I think his personality would work in Miami.
I agree with you.
I don't know why. Like, I feel like the kind of yeoman-like approach and the fact that most of the young guys on the team are young, kind of eclectic, have kind of off-the-court interests. I mean, you're taking a guy like Kelly Olynyk from Canada. You're taking a guy from Josh from Oklahoma.
And Justice Winslow lives in the Art District and just loves to do all that stuff. And Miami is a melting pot. South Florida is a melting pot. Boston you could never call that a melting pot. So it's very – you're right. It's two different cultures. He would fit in. That said, if anybody's overvaluing Kyrie Irving, I think it's Kyrie Irving. and it goes back to that leadership thing. He's not a number one player. And I think everybody figured that out. And there were questions. And by the way, there were questions about, can Kyrie lead? This is what he did before LeBron James. You know what he was like 20 years old before LeBron James got there. He also developed. And you don't walk into the league and start going to the playoffs unless you're Dwayne Wade. Like, you don't. It's just, of course he got better after LeBron James. He got older. He developed his skills. He became a better basketball player. So I don't want all that pre-LeBron James stuff. like those numbers keep coming out, and I'm like, those, they don't even matter. They don't matter at all.
They don't.
And so what matters is that, like you said, he has championship level experience. That stuff is important. Ultimately, he's a smallish point guard that can't lead a team the way LeBron or Kawhi Leonard or Kevin Durant can. He just can't. He's not your 1A guy. But you know what? He is a damn good number two option. He was incredible next to LeBron James. And he and LeBron single-handedly dismantled that vaunted Warriors defense that helped them win 73 games by pick and roll after pick and roll, just getting to the basket and putting their shoulders into guys. He's really, really good at that. And I think everybody in the league understands he's a great number two option, but you don't want him leading your team. And that's why Brooklyn is wondering, do we even want him if he's not coming with Kevin Durant? And that's the question that you got to ask. IAW writes in, do you think the Heat will use any of the MLE to go after a player like Jabari Parker as a reclamation project? David, can I just say, maybe they go after Jabari Parker at a minimum. There's no, and I don't think they will. I don't see them dipping into the MLE to just pay. They're already over the luxury tax apron. I think they're just going to let the taxpayer mid-level exception just sort of go, and they're not going to use it, or at least hold on to it during the season.
Yeah, I mean, you're kind of breaking big news here, I'm sure, for a lot of our listeners, in that they're kind of hoping that Miami, as cap constrained as they are, will still be able to add some player of interest. That doesn't seem really likely. I mean, I think you're spot on. It's just they're not going to exceed the salary cap even further and go into that luxury tax area there because of, you know, a Jabari Parker. He's not the kind of player worth paying an extra 20-something million for.
Let's take a break here, and then we're going to get to a question about maybe a potential landing spot for Hassan Whiteside. You're listening to Locked On Heat.
For the latest takes on NBA free agency, follow all of the Locked On Podcast Network hosts on one Twitter feed at Locked On NBA Net. It's an awesome way to get all the latest opinions from the local experts during NBA free agency, which starts on Sunday night. Follow along on Twitter at Locked On NBA Net. Josh Elliott writes in, if Steven Adams gets moved, could Hassan be a flyer option for the Thunder?
Oklahoma City is looking to move Steven Adams because they're in salary cap peril. Obviously Hassan's deal kind of expires at the end of this season as opposed to Adams, which expires the following year. So I guess it could make sense. I mean, to me, it could be part of an overall rebuilding project in Oklahoma City, something that we floated and locked in NBA, where Russell Westbrook gets traded to Houston for Chris Paul, and then all of a sudden Paul George is your go-to player. Hassan Whiteside could fill he could fill the DeAndre Jordan next to Chris Paul there. I could see that playing out pretty well.
If they really, really want to open up cap space for 2020, is the only way I see it happening. I don't know if it would be an exchange. Would it be Whiteside for Steven Adams? Is there a third team? Steven Adams goes to that team. The Heat get off of Whiteside's contract and the Thunder give him back, I don't know, like an Andre Roberson or something. I don't know. But you probably have to stack a few different salaries. Yeah, I guess. I don't know. Like, I guess it's possible. I don't see the Thunder going after Whiteside in order to replace Steven Adams, even for one season. The only way it would work is if they just said, hey, we know that, like, if the Thunder were like, we have to open up salary after this year. We're just not going to pay the tax for 2 years in a row. Because I don't see the way the Thunder can save a whole ton of money right now. There are teams with a lot of cap space. And what they're going to do this summer, the Thunder, there are teams with a lot of cap space. There's a lot of free agents, but there's not a whole lot of max-level free agents. There's, you know, a finite amount of those guys. Teams that strike out, are they going to be willing to absorb salary in exchange for future assets? Could the Thunder find a team to absorb the Steven Adams salary, the Dennis Schroeder salary, and attach some picks to those guys in exchange for immediate cap relief? Yeah, maybe, and that's probably what they'll look like. They'll look at down the road, you know, after the first few days of free agency play out. But like, it's not going to be a Whiteside for Adams swap. I just don't see that happening. So,
well, that notwithstanding, would you like the idea of Steven Adams on the Heat roster?
But more than Whiteside. But then again, like, does he play next to Bam? I don't love it. I don't love it. I've brought up Kevin Love a million times. Kevin Love and Bam, that fits as a front court. Steven Adams and Bam, you know, as much as Barry Jackson might want is more rebounding on the floor, I don't think that's a good idea.
Yeah, that's a good point. And look, I mean, even Thunder fans love Steven. And I mean, he's a great personality, always a great quote, fun to talk to from a media perspective, whatever. there are limitations to his game. I mean, you're looking for more versatile players across the board, and that's not it. I mean, he's kind of a throwback, and he's not exactly the same level of rim protection even that you get out of Hassan Whiteside. So there are drawbacks there. Like, he'll set really great screens, and he'll go after rebounds very aggressively. You know, he'll take a punch from Vince Carter. Not that that's saying much, but... you know, I as far as I'm concerned, I don't think he's an upgrade either, and that's a problem. Like, he's an upgrade personality wise, but that's not saying much either. Yeah, that's it.
H underscore goatside 21.
There we go.
Right, son.
I know. I'll just let me put this out there for our listeners. You, Wes, did not even want to answer this question because you thought that this was an obvious case of internet trolling, which I don't think is a thing. But here we are answering the question anyway, because I twisted your arm.
You twisted my arm. You wanted to talk about this, so I'm going to read this dumb question, and then you're going to answer it, and then I might not. It might just be your answer on this recording. When is Riley going to give Hassan more minutes? 2015 and 2016, he let Hassan come along and become a near all-star. This is why this is such an obvious troll. Like, what is this? We probably would have taken the Cavs to 7, and if he had been healthy. We maxed him, and now he's a bench guy. When is Riley going to respect him? Now we got another question. This is two tweets worth of questions that you wanted to answer. Free agency talk is everywhere, and I'm seeing people say LeBron cost Wade millions when... in reality, Pat just didn't want to pay him. Why is Pat getting a pass for that? And how do you feel about Miami not being free agency players this summer, other than hoping Jimmy wants to come here? Okay. Have the floor, David.
Well, at least the first part of Goatside 21's question there. I don't think Riley has anything, nor has he ever had anything to do with how many minutes Hassan Whiteside gets. I think... you know, obviously, that's always been Eric Spoelstra's decision. And he played Whiteside as many minutes as he could earlier in his career when he was healthy and making an impact and trying to prove himself in this league so that he could cash in the way he has. I don't know that he ever was a near all-star, although he was more productive and efficient during whatever playing time he was getting. But if we recall, not so long ago, he was taking a backseat to Stat there. So, I mean, he's not exactly... he hasn't always been an impact player. There have been questions regarding his waning level of effort and everything else, and I think those questions are still there. I think there are overall health concerns regarding Hassan, and he's not the player he once was. He's not as effective offensively or defensively as he once was. And there are also, as we said before, regarding Steven Adams, real limitations in his games. He's not a maximum effort type guy. He doesn't set good screens. He is a lob threat. Occasionally, part of that has to do with one, health, and two, effort on those screens. If you don't create any space, your pick and roll handlers aren't going to be able to get much opportunity to toss the perfect lob. Although Wade did have good chemistry with Hassan, but even that, towards the end of that one season they had together, that kind of waned because, well, I mean, Hassan just wasn't able to catch the lobs as efficiently as he once had. So,
When is Riley going to respect him? That's what I wanted to get to. And look, you're pulling me in. You're pulling me in here. You just nailed it. What respect did he earn just being 7 feet tall? Is that the respect? Is that why he gets respect? Because like, we're not breaking news here. Everybody knows this. The coaches have talked about this. Pat Riley has talked about this. He needs to put in more effort, and he didn't. So where's the why is he going to respect that?
I would actually go so far as to say that if anybody in that front office respects Hassan Whiteside, it's probably Pat Riley. And that's more a question about Riley and where he's at this point in his career. But I think that he still wholeheartedly believes in Hassan. Like, we've talked about this before. We've kind of hinted at the more softer, gentler side of Pat Riley. I think he still believes in Hassan as a big, goofy kid with this incredible level of athleticism and talent and length and all that. And just, he respected the hell out of him, gave him $100 million. I'll be honest with you. I don't know how much more. I'd love to get that kind of level of respect at some point. I don't know.
So the other part of this, free agency talks everywhere. I'm seeing people say LeBron cost Wade millions when in real. Do you even want to answer that? Like, is that, do you care? Look, you could just say no. We could pass that.
As far as the question is concerned, look, LeBron opted out, and I think Wade and Bosch opted out, expecting that they were all going to re-sign together for long-term deals, and it didn't work out that way. So,
and everybody blames Pat Riley for that. So I don't think anybody's giving... When did Pat Riley get a pass for giving Tyler Johnson the Dwayne Wade money? I thought we all agreed that that was dumb.
Yeah.
Didn't we all agree on that? Okay. How do you feel about Miami not being free agent to be players this summer? Now, that is the only part of this question that is legitimate, because we had been actually talking about this, and we have to plan shows and do this, and it just sort of sucks knowing that Sunday is around the corner, free agency is going to open up, and all Miami is going to be able to do is sit on their hands and not even really wait. Like, there's not even a – they can't wait for anything. There's nothing to wait for other than 2020. Right? When all these salaries come off their books, this is just sort of the team, and that sort of bums me out. That's it. Like, it's not one individual player that I have a problem with. It's not like, it's the same group, and we know how good this team is. Not very. And we've got to do this for another 82 games? I just wanted something different.
Like, one last year was, Dwayne Wade's coming back. How is that going to work for a full season with this group that has limited personality? The talk, I'll never forget, and I brought it up, it feels like a million times, sitting there media day asking Eric Spoelstra about the team's depth and why he thinks it's a strength of this team, and him going on and on and on about why this team is better conditioned and better ready because of that depth and versatility, etc. And it didn't work out, and it's not going to work out this season. I don't know what the difference can be. Like, can James Johnson get in slightly better shape and stay healthy so that maybe he can be an impact player for, 75 games instead of 60-something games or 40-something games? I mean, can Deion Waiters be an impact player? Those are the only questions. Other than that, it's about finding mesh, finding how these players kind of play off each other, and the hope, however insincere it might be, that they have another level to reach as a group. And I don't know if that's actually going to play out or not. It could just be another middling 40-some win team, and low 40-something. It's not like this is – they're not flirting with 49 wins or anything like that.
And it looks like the East is only going to get better. It looks like one of these New York teams is going to do something in free agency. The Raptors have been making headway in re-signing Kawhi Leonard, it sounds like.
Well, the Hornets are falling apart, that's for sure.
Well, okay. So there you go. There's one less competition for that team to win 40 games and not make the postseason. But the Heat are going to get leapt by guys or by other teams, and they are just bound to whatever this is for another season, it looks like. Let's take a quick break here, and then we're going to talk about our all-time Heat starting five.
Remember to listen to and subscribe to new and archived episodes of Locked On Heat on Himalaya, as well as on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. If you're on iTunes, rate us, review us, say nice things about us. Mark writes in, who makes your all-time Heat starting five?
So there's a consensus answer to this, right?
We've gone over it, I think.
We've talked about this last
year. Might have been last offseason, or maybe been the previous one.
So the consensus here is Tim Hardaway, Dwayne Wade, LeBron James, Chris Bosh, Alonzo Mourning. That's the consensus. You go by the stats, career achievements. That I don't think that you can argue that that is probably the consensus. Maybe you could put Shaq in there over Zoe only because Shaq won a championship with Zoe, but he was a starting center. But that's pretty much it. I will say this. That is not my Heat starting five. I think I could find one that would beat that starting five.
Ooh, that's kind of brave. I'm not sure who's going to beat that starting five.
Well, that would be your starting five, I assume?
I can't think of anybody else right now that would. I mean, look, I love what we did. I want to say it was last year now, where we had our draft of the best all-time team.
That was
team.
So fun. Yeah.
And I think I still think my team would have still find a way to beat yours.
Didn't we agree that your team was better?
I'll happily take that. I think most people on the internet, whatever that is, they agreed that that your team was better. I think you had...
Maybe I had a Son Whiteside and this Goatside 21 guy was just like creating burner accounts and pumping my team.
I'm almost 100% sure Hassan did not make either of our teams. If you recall correctly, I went with... you went with two coaches. You went with both Spoelstra and Riley on your roster.
Yeah, because I tried to monopolize the coaches. Yeah, I tried to screw you over because you took Bosh.
I went with the player coach option, I think.
Yeah, and that was the trump card. You went with the player because you had the number one pick, and I think you took LeBron, right?
Yeah, I did.
So, and you made him the player coach, and I was very upset that I didn't think of that, and I wasted a pick on a second coach that I didn't need. So, anyway, that was a great podcast. We should go back and find that in the archives. It's somewhere. That was a fun time, but now that I don't have to compete with you for players, My top five would be LeBron and Dwayne Wade, obviously.
Okay.
I still have Bosch.
Sure.
Bosch plays center.
Okay.
So no Alonzo Mourning, no Shaquille O'Neal. Not in my starting five.
Okay.
I put Lamar Odom on there as my power forward.
Yeah, that's
and now I've got a front court of Lamar Odom. And you know that I love me that 1 year of Lamar Odom. It's one of my favorite Heat players of all time is one season of Lamar Odom. So I've got LeBron, Dwayne Wade, Lamar Odom, and Chris Bosh.
That's three playmakers and Bosh, which is as versatile a defender as you're ever going to get.
And a stationary playmaker from the post and the elbow. Great triple threat guy. So I need one other guy. I need one other wing player who can guard and shoot threes. You know, I'm going through, Eddie Jones. I was like, do I go Glenn Rice? He wasn't that great at guarding, but...
I know who you're going to pick. Shane Battier.
I almost went Shane Battier.
Really?
I almost went Shane Battier.
I'm intrigued.
I went with Josh Richardson.
Ho, ho, ho! Wow!
I went with Josh Richardson. This isn't the five best players, okay? And I think that's what Mark's question was. In fact, I know that that was Mark's question. But, like I said, the consensus is there. I took this and ran with it. I think this team could beat that team. I think LeBron and Dwayne Wade are your two ball handlers. We know LeBron functions well with a secondary ball handler, like he did with Dwayne Wade, like he did with Kyrie Irving. He needs that. It gives him a reprieve on offense. It allows him to play off the ball a little bit more. And we saw LeBron and Wade mesh really, really well. So I think you have LeBron and Wade. Boom. Lamar Odom and Chris Bosh. Now all of a sudden you have like what I guess Chris Bosh and Josh McRoberts was supposed to be, where you have these two playmaking bigs who could just do a lot of stuff and open up the offense completely. Both of them are great defenders, and this team is able to switch everything. And then having Josh Richardson in there, an all-NBA level defender whose skills would only be highlighted and heightened when he's bracketed between all these kinds of guys. Could you imagine Josh just like hanging out in that Klay Thompson spot, just like off the, you know, the above the break three, and just draining three after three, just wide open threes because everybody's looking at LeBron and Wade and Bosh and Odom. And then just on defense, being able to put all of that effort in there and just making all NBA defensive
teams. Could he lock down Tim Hardaway, though?
Yes. I mean, lock down, but like, not lock down. Nobody's locking down Tim Hardaway, but I'll tell you what, Tim Hardaway's not guarding anybody in my starting five. I mean, I guess you hide Hardaway on Richardson, but Richardson can attack Hardaway off the dribble. He's bigger than Hardaway.
Yeah, taller. I mean, he's taller. He's not heavier.
But he can take Hardaway off the dribble, and then, you know, who's Alonzo Mourning guarding? Honestly, like, yeah, he guards Bosch, and then Bosch stretches him out.
Yeah, that's not going to work.
So
no, you're right. You're right. It's a very intriguing lineup, and I like Lamar Odom. I think I had Odom on my team. And
I was upset about that too. That was actually the pick that set me over the top and why I took two coaches. You got in my head, and I ruined my draft strategy.
the Heat all-time starting lineup, there's so many different options there. You could even have gone with Glenn Rice there, and by the same things that you said about Klay Thompson, obviously lacking in the defense capacity, but... I mean, from the offensive standpoint, I mean, God, having Glenn Rice out there with the kind of open lanes that Dwayne Wade and LeBron James are creating, that would be...
I almost put him at the Lamar Odom spot as like a small ball four.
Yeah.
Like a Shane Battier type of four, I guess.
Yeah, that's a good option too.
But I went Odom, obviously, for the playmaking and the defense. But
that's it for today. You can connect with us on Twitter using the hashtag AskHelloHeat or email us at LockedOnHeat@gmail.com. We'll be back next week. Thanks for listening, and thanks for joining me, David.
I can't believe Whiteside didn't make your starting five. Yeah!